I'm sitting in the Victorian shelter on Hutchins Point, looking out across a desolate seascape of foaming seas and winds that have rushed in straight from the Atlantic. The last time they touched land was in Newfoundland in Canada. The Romans were the first to appreciate Porthcawl's attraction for its sea views and its beautiful atmosphere, because certainly they had two major buildings in Porthcawl. The first was a villa at Dannacraig, and the second was up at Rest Bay, where a coastal lookout station was built. But before then, the site of Porthcawl town itself was a sandy wasteland with huge dunes that stretched miles inland. And we know that the town, the future site of the town of Porthcawl, was deserted because in 1841 a Viking grave was found. The Vikings would not have buried one of their crewmates in an area that was inhabited because they valued the afterlife as much as the life itself. Up at Rest Bay, certainly a building existed called Castell Morlais, which translates to the Fortress of the Sea Sound, which on a day like today is very appropriate. And that was probably a tower to guard the fortress inland at Kenvig from the Hiberni, which were a race of sea warriors. So the Castell Morlais was probably a Roman lookout station guarding the coast from these invaders.
We've got tribute artists coming from Malta and from America.
I am Elvis Aaron Presley and I come from Birmingham.
Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher.
I'm Elvis Aaron Presley and I come from Italy.
The biggest Elvis festival in Europe. Viva! Fans arriving from Finland, Texas, descending on Porthcawl from all over.
If you see it once, you'll never be the same again.
For this three-day wall-to-wall Elvis fest.
Viva Las Vegas. Viva. Well, hello, I'm Elvis Aaron Presley from Dallas, Texas.
Viva. Viva.
Porthcawl.
My name is Councillor Phil Rickson. I am the mayor of Porthcawl. Porthcawl is a seaside resort on the south coast of Wales. The population is about 20,000 people. The town of Porthcawl is probably no more than about 150 years old. But what happened in the heyday of the coal mining industry in South Wales, a lot of coal was being exported and coal owners were looking for ports from which to extort this coal. And because the valleys were near to us, the Maesteg valleys, Pontycumber valleys, and the Dufferin valleys, they were near to us. The easiest way to do it was to build a railroad all the way from up the valleys to Porthcawl. John Brogdon got involved. He was an engineer, owned a few engineering works in and around the area. In the late 1800s, 1890s, we exported more coal for Porthcawl than either Cardiff, Barry or Swansea. We exported something like about a quarter of a million tons of coal from Porthcawl all over the world. Unfortunately for Porthcawl, they developed a dock in Porthcawl but a dock in Barry, then a little bit later Cardiff. Ships could come 24 hours a day and not have to wait for the tide. We went down from exporting a quarter of a million tons of coal to about 2,000 tons, which of course had a disastrous effect on the docks before it was finally filled in and became what is now known as Salt Lake Harbor.
Well, it took my baby, but it never will again.
Porthcawl was a victim of the straightforward economics of the coal trade at the end of the 19th century, and then it consciously turned to this second role. If you look at the directories of the 1890s, Porthcawl is described as a port and bathing place. And from about the Edwardian period, the first years of the new century onwards, the bathing place began to take over, and the local landowners, the local business people, could see that they were far better off in, you know, investing in leisure facilities rather than further development of the port.
Come on, kids, from 8 to 80. Hey there, mister, bring your lady. There's a big show on the inside. It's carnival time.
My name is Peter Stead, a cultural historian, a visiting professor at the University of Glenmore.
It's carnival time.
So seaside resorts became fashionable in Britain in the 20s and 30s. There was a great extension of the paid holidays provision in those decades. And so the workers of the country, you know, went to the resorts. The two favourite places, of course, were Porthcawl and Barry. But Gwyn Thomas, the Rhondda novelist, has a marvellous section in which he describes the way in which throughout the valleys, you know, chapel deacons would have almost a kind of theological debate as to whether the Sunday school trip should go to Barry or Porthcawl. In the Rhondda, usually Barry won, because I think Barry was regarded as a slightly kind of wilder place. Because it was an island in Barry, there were less constraints. Perhaps you had to be on a little bit better behaviour in Porthcawl. Perhaps Porthcawl was a little bit posher, says Gwyn Thomas. I'm not sure if that's right, but there was a kind of division. Some people preferred Barry, Rhondda, Aberdare valleys, Merthyr valleys. Some people preferred Porthcawl, above all, of course, the Ogmore and Llynvie valleys. And from the very beginning, Porthcawl has been described as Maesteg by the sea. It was so close for the miners from Maesteg to go down. So the pattern was day trips, excursions by charaban or by train. You would go with clubs, you would go with the chapels, the Sunday school excursions. It became a regular feature. And then, of course, we have the rise of the caravan, the great heyday of the caravan. And, of course, Porthcawl was to forge a reputation as the great caravan resort almost in the country. The development of Treco Bay, with in the decades after the Second World War, almost 4,000 caravans in Treco Bay. It boasted of being the largest caravan site in Europe, and very few people would have disputed that. Treco Bay, in a sense, almost became a valley town, you know, by the sea, not least, of course, in miners' fortnight, the period when the pits were closed last week of July, in the first week in August. And indeed, you can almost imagine a kind of east-west pattern with Treco Bay in the east and the caravans. That's where the caravanners were. Then you would near the Sandy Bay, Coney Beach, where you had the fun fair. And the fun fair was terrific. They were marvelous rides. The scenic railway, the water chute, the Tunnel of Love, the Chamber of Horrors. It was a tremendous experience. You could wander around there for hours. On that site, apart from riding the donkeys on the beach and going into the fairground, they used that site for many, many other things. There were great fireworks displays there, the great jazz band competitions of the interwar years, with the miners with their jazz bands. Wonderful boxing events, of course, and Porthcawl became a boxing location in the post-war period. Fights with Joe Erskine, Dick Richardson, and most famously Brian London, where the fighting outside the ring was even better than the fight in the ring. There was always this frisson of excitement on that particular site. A community came into being at Treco Bay. Many people from the same place, you know, so you were living in the caravan cheek by jowl with your neighbours. You met people from other valleys, and new relationships, not least sexual relationships, were forged there. And Gwyn Thomas has got a marvellous story of a Rhondda miner who got so drunk he forgot where he was. He actually thought he was back in the Rhondda, but he was wandering around the caravan shouting out his wife's name, Megan. He never found his wife, but he was welcomed into caravans by five other women who claimed to be called Megan. You know, Treco Bay was a very, very important part of the South Wales experience in terms of making new friends, and not least, of course, sexual liaisons.
Hey mama, don't you treat me wrong. Come and love your daddy all night long.
I was a teenager in the 50s when Elvis first sprung on the scene. One of the delights in the late 50s was to come to the pavilion here on a Saturday night. The girls would sit one side of the auditorium and the boys would sit the other, and then one boy would dare another boy to go over and ask a girl to dance. This is how we got to know the pavilion.
See the girl with the diamond ring, she knows how to shake her thing, all right.
The pavilion is the hub of entertainment in Porthcawl. Obviously, like a lot of leisure buildings, probably all over the UK, it tends to lose money. Buildings like this can't lose money forever. It's a drain on the ratepayers. So there are moves afoot at this moment which will safeguard the future of the pavilion. We just want this to become, again, the hub of Porthcawl.
Oh,
oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh.
It'll be interesting to see how big the festival becomes, because I think it's caught everybody unawares, and it just shows how big Elvis still is. Well, I'm Peter Phillips. I'm the organiser of the Porthcawl Elvis Festival. Actually, the roots of the idea lie in the Grand Pavilion. I think it's pretty well known that the building's under threat of closure. And I was asked, a couple of people asked me to have a look at the pavilion commercially to see, you know, what's going wrong, what could be done. And in the back of my mind, I had an idea to do an awards event for Elvis tribute artists, actually recognise them as serious musicians, which they are. What happened was the town got behind this, and that's grown then, and it's exploded into, you know, 40-odd different events over 3 days. There's even the local church is doing an Elvis gospel service on the Sunday afternoon, local bands doing Elvis sets, there's competitions for Elvis tribute artists, karaoke competitions, they're recreating the wedding scene from Blue Hawaii, the mayor and his wife are renewing their wedding vows on this Hawaiian garden that's being built on the seafront. It's absolutely lunacy. I'd say if you don't like Elvis, you better avoid Porthcawl at the still for the whole weekend.
Hello, Brentford Hotel. No, sorry, we are full. My name is Nadine Irshad. I'm the manager of the Brentford Hotel. I have been running the place just for over 2 years now. I've come to know that in past, Porthcawl was very, very busy. But in last few years, it has declined. The business has declined, or the visitors. Miners have stopped coming to Porthcawl. And now it's tourism, contractors, businessmen around the area, and the steelwork. It is very unusual idea for Porthcawl, and it's marvelous idea to come up with something like Elvis Festival, but so far it's very successful. People are very enthusiastic. Everyone is participating and looking forward to it, because it's bringing a lot of the visitors into Porthcawl. At least 23,000 people are coming to Porthcawl. It's something very unusual and very different. Porthcawl will be full of Elvises look-alike. Brentford Hotel. Oh, directions. You take Junction 37 off the motorway, and as you come to Esplanade and Rest Bay, just before the Rest Bay on the Esplanade, you turn into Mary Street, which would be Lonely Street for that particular weekend. And we are down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be. I'll be so lonely, baby. Well, I'm so lonely.
We'll be so lonely, they could die. It scares me. It's going to be like a mini Woodstock by Sunday afternoon.
This is not the first time the Americans have invaded Porthcawl. I'm Steve Maitland-Thomas, and I've lived in Porthcawl for 14 years, although my family has been here for 40. On the 18th of October 1943, we were invaded, for want of a better word, by the 107th Field Artillery Battalion of the 28th US Infantry Division. And on the 1st of April 1944, we were honoured to welcome General Eisenhower to Porthcawl. The Seabank Hotel housed the officers from the 107th Field Artillery Battalion, and when Eisenhower visited here, this would have been one of the first places in Britain that American officers actually learnt of the impending invasion of Europe.
Until the 1950s, 1960s, everyone went to chapel, everyone went to the choral activities and the gamanvas associated with chapels. The other thing was the cinema. Every Welsh village had 2, 3, 4 cinemas. Everyone went to the cinema several times a week, and then usually there was a dance hall in the Miners' Institute, the local library, the town hall, the pavilion. There was usually a dance on Saturday night, and so your activity, you know, which was plentiful, you know, they were active, vibrant days, but focused on those things. But then, in the mid-50s, there came this kind of impact from America, this enormous explosion. America had always called the tune in terms of popular culture, but this was a new phenomenon. The youth culture, the new music, rock and roll, came from the States. Rock Around the Clock came and was played in the local cinemas, and people started jiving in the aisle. Cinema managers complained about rowdy behavior, people jiving. There was a buzz in the school. Have you seen the film? You know, have you danced the new rock and roll? Suddenly, you know, over a 10-15 year period, the youth culture was completely reborn, and it became something in its own way. If you subscribe to youth culture, if you belong to youth culture, you didn't have to have a position with regard to the rest of society. It was all inclusive. It was his own thing. Young people became important, recognizably important, you know, as a distinct group in terms of politics and their views, consciously living through a revolution. And above all, of course, the sexual energy. And suddenly there was this kind of outpouring of sexual energy. It just hit us all. A new age was born. And clearly, looking back on the 20th century, you can describe this as a revolution. But from the start, Elvis was a real turning point. Well, it's Saturday night and I just got paid. I fool about my money, don't try to save. My heart says go, go, have a time. Well, it's Saturday night, baby, and I'm feeling fine. I'm gonna rock it up. I'm gonna rev it up. Having a ball tonight.
Looking around this hall today takes me back to my youth, because I spent most of my days growing up here in the main hall of the Porthcawl Grand Pavilion. I'm Norman Harris. My father was the entertainments manager of Porthcawl for 10 years or more. And from the ages of 10 to 21, I was in this place daily, not just working, but experiencing what took place here and what went on. And they were extremely special days with all sorts of live top entertainment, from people like Lulu to the Kinks, to the Animals, to Manfred Mann, the Yardbirds, all sorts of top groups used to perform in this fantastic hall. So it has got many, many special memories for me personally. And there was a night here with the Animals, Eric Burden, when you couldn't even move in this building. I remember being sat up on the balcony. I was really young. Shouldn't probably have been here, but you just couldn't move in the place. It was crazy times and fantastic turnouts for such bands as that. I can remember a standard weekend, you'd have something going on Friday night, like a function, maybe a private function. On the Saturday, you'd have another function taking place in the afternoon. In the night, we'd have ballroom dancing or some other form of dancing. On the Sunday, you'd have an art show taking place in the lesser hall and spilling off into the main hall. On a Sunday night, you'd have a choir year. And so by Monday morning, in those short 2 or 3 days, you'd have possibly held 6 to 8 functions here. It's hard for seaside resorts and historical buildings like this to compete. The Pavilion has done remarkably well. I mean, it must be over 70 years old now. And you can still hold the best venues that you want to hold in South Wales here in this hall, which is a credit to it. Most Porthcawl residents treasure this place. They've always spent time in it, from choirs on Sunday nights to ballroom dancing on Saturdays. There has been talk recently of the Porthcawl Grand Pavilion possibly being pulled down for some developments and so forth. Well, they'd have to scrape me off the dome and about a couple of hundred other people that were born and bred in this town to get to that stage. This place has got a lot of memories. If only these walls could talk.
My warmest greetings to the people of my beloved Wales, and a special hello to the miners of South Wales.
One particular voice of the 20th century that resonates here is that rich, unmistakable velvet voice of Paul Robeson. It could break your heart, it could stir your soul, and somehow it had the capacity to reach out and change people's lives. My name is Beverly Humphreys. I work with Willard White on a Paul Robeson tribute concert, and we perform all over the country. And I also coordinate the Let Paul Robeson Sing exhibition. His connection with the Pavilion from 1957 is legendary. But his association with the South Wales miners goes back much further to the early 30s, when he'd met a group of miners singing in London outside the Drury Lane Theatre. They were on a hunger march. Then in 1938, He spoke and sang at a great rally in Mountain Ash to commemorate the Welshman who'd been killed in action with the International Brigade in the Spanish Civil War. So Port Robeson had a very warm association with the miners. They shared a common philosophy and that vision of a fairer, more peaceful world. The South Wales miners had instigated an Eisteddfod here in Porthcawl in 1948. It was unique in Europe. It was the only major cultural festival organised by a trades union. And every year from 1952 to 1957, they invited Paul Robeson to come to Porthcawl. But of course he couldn't, because in 1950 the American government had taken away his passport and refused him all rights to travel. And he was one of those victims of the McCarthy witch hunt. He was accused of un-American activities. He'd been very outspoken in his passionate call for equality and world peace. And he'd upset a lot of people. Because if you were black and you were singing and entertaining the white people, that was fine. But the minute you started talking about politics and maybe criticising your government at home and abroad, then you had to be silenced. But the National Union of Mine Workers did not give up. They arranged a live link-up via a transatlantic phone call between New York and here in the pavilion at Porthcawl. Not as easy then as it is now, and very expensive. Harry Belafonte actually paid for it. Just imagine the atmosphere here in the pavilion that October night in 1957. There was a capacity audience, the Treorchy male choir, Will Painter, the president of the South Wales Association of Mine Workers. He was introducing the proceedings. He was going to talk directly to Paul Robeson, incarcerated there in New York. It was electric. Everyone was waiting. Was it going to work? And then...
I can't tell you what it means to hear you like this. It seems as though I'm really standing there right with you.
There was the voice of Paul Robeson himself, greeting everyone, singing spirituals and Schubert and Beethoven songs, and saying from the bottom of his heart that he felt as though he were right there with everyone in Porthcawl. And his son Paul Jr., who was in that studio in New York that night, remembers it so well, and he says that that link-up with Porthcawl that night was so significant to his father. He was victimised, silenced in his own country, almost erased from history. And the fact that Welsh people loved him, cared about him, and hadn't forgotten him gave him such a feeling of renewed hope and a strength to go on fighting. He was, I think, at that moment almost at breaking point. And then, of course, the following year, 1958, after 8 long years, his passport was restored. And one of the first places that he visited was Wales. He came to Ebbw Vale, to the National Eisteddfod, and he was embraced, literally, by everyone. So Paul Robeson's voice, his art, his humanity meant that he was known and loved by millions of people all over the world, but especially here in Wales. His life and his love and his voice are intertwined with us here in Wales and will be forever, I think.
I'm Harold Phillips, chairman of Kempy Hill and District Melbourne's Choir. Our current rehearsals are all based around the Royal Albert Hall and, of course, the Elvis Festival this weekend. The choir is actually performing twice at the festival, at lunchtime in Trinity Church and then at 7 o'clock in the pavilion to close the whole proceedings down. Our Elvis repertoire is very limited, but we feel that we can probably do him justice.
You have to remember that in the days of the 50s and 60s, when the steam trains were running and we had a railway coming into Porthcawl, that it would be nothing for 15,000 people per day to come by train to visit Porthcawl for the day.
People from all over the world are descending on Porthcawl for this 3 days of wall-to-wall Elvis.
I think that if you look back on this century and you thought of the greats, and Elvis would be such a phenomenon. He's got to be top of all that. I think nobody else would spring to mind or be as worldwide known as, I mean, they're not in the same league in stature as Elvis.
On some occasions, there were so many trains and they had nowhere to park, and they were in coal sidings, good sidings, as long as they can get them out the way.
It's rapidly approaching. It's become genuinely scary. People are saying, gosh, I bumped into somebody in a meeting in London and they're talking about coming down to the Elvis Festival. They seem to be coming from everywhere. I know a pub I was speaking to yesterday said, oh, we had a phone call from New Zealand. Somebody wanted 40-odd tickets.
And we were known then as the Gem of the Seven Seas.
You know, it's become actually quite scary as to what's going to happen. In a way, it's exciting. We've certainly established the biggest Elvis festival in Europe.
From the start, Elvis was a real turning point. To celebrate Elvis today is not just nostalgia.
Glory, glory,
to celebrate Elvis is to be aware of what I think was one of the most important cultural turning points, and indeed political turning points, in 20th century history.
I don't know what's going to happen. That's the intriguing thing about it.
Thank you very much.
My name's Tony. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm driving a minibus up to Gatwick Airport to pick up Elvis.
And I'm Gary. I'm the photographer for the festival over the weekend in Porthcawl. And I'm here, well, with the hope of getting one or two different photographs of Elvis and his entourage as they land at Gatwick.
Hopefully he should be arriving by 6:30 in the morning.
We've got tribute artists coming from Malta and from America.
I am Elvis Aaron Presley and I come from Birmingham.
Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher.
I'm Elvis Aaron Presley and I come from Italy.
The biggest Elvis festival in Europe.
What Elvis would you like me to be?
Fans arriving from Finland, Texas, descending on Porthcawl from all over.
If you see it once, you'll never be the same again.
For this 3-day wall-to-wall Elvis fest.
Well, hello, I'm Elvis Aaron Presley from Dallas, Texas.
Porthcawl.
Come on, shook up.
It'll be interesting to see how big the festival becomes, because I think it's caught everybody unawares and it just shows how big Elvis still is. Well, I'm Peter Phillips. I'm the organiser of the Porthcawl Elvis Festival. Actually, the roots of the idea lie in the Grand Pavilion. I think it's pretty well known that the building's under threat of closure. And I was asked, a couple of people asked me to have a look at the pavilion commercially to see, you know, what's going wrong, what could be done. And in the back of my mind, I had an idea to do an awards event for Elvis tribute artists, actually recognise them as serious musicians, which they are. So the show is called the Elvis, and it was, you know, a bit like an Oscars award ceremony for Elvis tribute artists. What happened was the town got behind this and said, well, let's put on a couple of extra Elvis events. And that's grown then, and it's exploded into, you know, 40-odd different events over 3 days. There's even the local church is doing an Elvis gospel service on the Sunday afternoon. The Kenfig Hill Male Voice Choir are doing an Elvis concert. And there's competitions for Elvis tribute artists, karaoke competitions. They're recreating the wedding scene from Blue Hawaii. The mayor and his wife are renewing their wedding vows on this a wine garden that's been built on the seafront. It's absolutely lunacy. And the mayor is splendidly sending a school bus down to Gatwick to pick the American tribute artist up, and which I think is fantastic.
Well, the same there for Hay Vehicles Parking. Let's see if it says anything. There we go. Exit straight in front of us. Job done then. Do you reckon we're going to recognise this guy, Ger?
Well, I've got a sign there that's made up and it says Elvis on it. So, you know, surely he knows his name.
Hello, I'm Elvis Presley. He would introduce himself to you like you didn't know who he was, and you would just think, oh, no kidding, you know, we know. I'm Sandy Pichon, and I'm here for the Elvis event to do a book signing for my book raised on Elvis, Elvis, Elvis. The first time I met Elvis, I was 12 years old. I lived in Memphis, and I asked my mother to take me over to his house one day after school because we were bored. Went up and knocked on the back door. Because in the South, the front door is for company. The maid came to the door, and I said, is Elvis home? And she said, he's sleeping. Well, it was 4:30 in the afternoon, so I was kind of taken aback because it was so late, and he was asleep, and I told her we would wait. I sat down on his motorcycle. My girlfriend sat down on the fender of his yellow Cadillac convertible, and we proceeded to wait. His parents came up in the pink Cadillac. They had been to the grocery store. And they were not at all surprised to see two girls trespassing. They were very nice. Mrs. Presley offered us lemonade. And when Mr. Presley came back to get the rest of the groceries, he brought us a glass of lemonade. So we sat there and we're looking around saying, do you think he's going to come out? And I heard the back door open and I just thought it was Mr. Presley coming back to get the rest of the groceries. And then the back of the bike went down and these two arms wrapped around me and he leaned up into my left ear and said, want to go for a ride? I promptly spilled the lemonade with all the grace of a 12-year-old, and he laughed, and he got off. I looked into those blue eyes, and that was it for life. You know, he was just gorgeous. He said, I have to go somewhere, but you girls come back anytime. And I took him at his word. I went back every day as long as we continued to live in Memphis, and it began a friendship that lasted until his death.
How are y'all?
How you doing? That's the buttons.
I'm Charles Stone.
I'm Tony.
Tony?
I'm driving.
I'm Gary.
Gary, how are you?
Craig, nice to meet you, man.
In the mid-50s, there came this kind of impact from the States. My name is Peter Stead, a cultural historian, a visiting professor at the University of Glenmore. Well, bless my soul, but what's wrong with me? America had always called the tune in terms of popular culture, but this was a new phenomenon, the youth culture, the new music. I'm in love. I'm all shook up. Until the 1950s, 1960s, everyone went to chapel, everyone went to the choral activities and the gamanvas associated with chapels. The other thing was the cinema. It was usually a dance. So your activity, you know, focused on those things. But then in the mid-50s, there came this kind of impact from America, this enormous explosion, rock and roll. Youth culture was completely reborn and it became something in its own way. Young people became important, recognizably important. Elvis was there, right there at the beginning of that. Clearly, looking back on the 20th century, you can describe this as a revolution. But from the start, Elvis was a real turning point.
Hi, my name is Charles Stone. And I'm in a minibus on the way to Porthcawl for the Elvis Festival. I actually worked with Elvis. I produced his shows for the last 8 years of his life. I worked hand-in-hand with the Colonel in deciding where the venues were going to play. I would scale them, which means how many tickets at which price, order the tickets, put them on sale, set up security. I did all the actual mechanics of doing the show. I did fly on the Lisa Marie every night with Elvis to the next city. Basically, I did it all. Whenever, you know, I am Craig's manager, and Matt called us a little, you know, Elvis and the Colonel reincarnated, I guess. He blew me away when I first saw him. I went to see him three or four more times after that before I ever approached him. My wife went with me, she was involved with Elvis as well through family, and she just said, "You got to go talk to him." I said, "Well, what am I going to do with an Elvis impersonator? I don't know." She said, you have to do it, no matter what you do. So I approached Craig. We had lunch one day, shook hands, made a deal, and started calling all my old friends out of the woodwork, and it worked. We just filmed a TV special in Las Vegas where we incorporated them into the special that we did, which made it easier. Every time we're in Vegas, they stay with us 24/7. Not because they're paid to, not because they have to. They hang out with us. We're all friends now. Mrs. Parker comes to dinner with us at least once when we're out there. If it wasn't for the tribute artists, I personally think he wouldn't be as popular today as he is. I think they do a tremendous amount to keep the memory alive. Just in America, there's 30,000 of them. When we get back, I think we play the Arkansas State Fair. We go back to casino in New Orleans in November. Then we go back to Vegas for the fair convention. And then we do a string of shows in North Texas in December, Christmas shows. In Porthcawl, we're playing a venue called The Cabin. I didn't know where Wales was, but to be honest about it, I'm looking forward to it. We can't wait to go.
Gotta do some living, got the wanderlust.
I'm a Cardiff Elvis.
I come from Penrith near the Scottish border.
Direct from Malta, the Maltese Elvis.
Better clear the highway, cause I'm gonna move some dust. Oh, I got wheels, wheels on my heels. And I gotta keep rolling, rolling along.
I'm Craig Parker, Elvis tribute artist from Dallas, Texas, USA. Man, I've been an Elvis fan as far back as I can remember. I had a collection of little 45 records when I was just a small kid. Used to play them until my mother would make me turn them off. Being on the outside, you might look in and say, why would somebody want to, be an Elvis impersonator, tribute artist? What can you gain out of that? It's from the inside, it's incredible to see how the fans still desire Elvis, and that's why I decided to pursue it, before there was even any money involved in it, just because the first few times I did it, I was persuaded to do it, and the people just seem to be attracted to it. I mean, there's a physical. And almost a spiritual attraction between doing Elvis music when you do it well and the reaction you get out of the fans. And I'd never had that before, playing any other kind of music. Basically as a regular entertainer, you're in the background. People, they don't really focus on you like they do when you're doing Elvis. People, they stop and they watch the show, and that was one of the things that really attracted me to it. Is when I started doing Elvis, it's like people were just immediately attracted to my entertainment, and as an entertainer, that's very appealing. So that's kind of how it all started for me. Now, I am very much looking forward to coming to Wales. I've never been to Europe. Just being a part of this festival, and people love Elvis so much, there's no way to go wrong with this kind of an event. And man, it's just gonna be great.
And I gotta keep rolling, rolling along.
Peter,
nice to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you.
Yeah.
Thanks
for coming
over. I don't know who this guy is, he says he's Elvis.
Thanks.
Nice to meet
Thanks
you.
For this. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for inviting us.
Yeah. No. Welcome to Wales.
These are my bodyguards.
Yeah.
Well, it's Saturday night and I just got paid. I fool about money, don't try to save. My heart says go, go, have a time. Saturday night, baby, and I feel if I'm all right. I wanna rip it up. I wanna shake it up. Gonna fall in love.
Almost shook up.
It's chaotic.
I'm not Elvis Presley, really.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Martin Elvis.
I'm Michelle, the wedding planner, and the mayor of Porthcawl is going to actually renew his vows now at 4 o'clock outside the pavilion here.
At the moment, it's under control.
Everybody's been really friendly. We've visited one or two bars.
We're trying to get the mayor's wedding
building the chapel, which has had to be built at the last minute because we're in a force 8 gale, coordinate the mayor's car, coordinate a pile of American cars and a chapter of bikers to all arrive in the same place at the same time. So I'm lying when I say it's under control.
Councillor Phil Rickson and Cheryl Rickson, the Mayor and Mayoress of Porthcawl, have been hugely supportive of this whole festival. We owe them a big thank you for holding happening. They're also big Elvis fans, and it's their 30th wedding anniversary this year. So they're going to renew their wedding vows here in about, I would say, 20 minutes, because...
Hi, I'm Gary. I've been following this for the last 2 days or so. I'm the photographer for the event, and it's been marvellous. The turnout from the people of Porthcawl has been absolutely outstanding, and all of the acts have been utterly fantastic. We had 6 Elvis tribute artists here at the High Tide last night, and that was a marvellous event. With MT Knight going through to the final in the pavilion, and deservedly so, I think. But there was an artist there from St Albans who was dressed up and did Elvis in his army gear, and he was something to look out for. Colbert Hamilton, he styles himself the Black Elvis. Actually, he looks a little bit like Little Richard, but if you listen to him, he is stunning. He's sort of Elvis 1957-60, a bit of a rocker with a bit of an edge to him. There's Martin the Maltese Elvis, fantastic voice. Danny Summers from Mallorca, very good as well. Everybody's been very friendly. Everybody is into Elvis. There's a young boy in there now, Jamie, I think his name is, 9, dressed up in the Gold Army suit. He's got the glasses, he's got the wig on, and he's, you know, a through and through Elvis fan. And they range from that sort of age to your great-gran, I suppose. Everybody with the Elvis wigs on and the T-shirts on, and everybody just being very friendly, having a good time, and sort of chilling out with all the music. Everybody's making instant friends. They're all marvellous. Love them to bits.
He's ready for a very special ceremony.
30 beautiful years. Put your hands together. This beautiful couple, thank you.
Would you please exchange rings?
You may kiss
them. Thank you to Porthcawl, the most beautiful place on earth.
For those who are wondering where we're going on honeymoon, the locals will understand this, the visitors won't. But Cheryl and I won a competition. We didn't win first prize, that was a week in Treco. We won second prize, which is 3 weeks in Treco, and off we go, thank you.
It feels good to have a marriage blessed by Elvis.
Porthcawl is the warmest town outside the south of the United States. The people are wonderful. The hospitality has been fantastic. I would love to come back. It's been such a wonderful experience. I hope that they'll invite me again. The Elvis love here is just tremendous. It's very difficult to be a judge in this contest. The thing is that they're all perpetuating the legacy, and that's what's so important.
Favorite song was Burning Love.
Jen has rock.
Don't be cruel.
You're always on my mind.
My favorite song is Loving Arms, because I was in the studio the night that he recorded that.
The Elvis Awards, what we wanted to do was recognize how much variation there was in Elvis's career. Elvis wasn't just one-dimensional, lots of facets to his career, which is why he was such a great entertainer. We've got the Gold Lamé Jacket Award, which recognizes Elvis's early career, pre-army career. We've got the Best Gospel Award, which is recognising gospel music. Elvis always gravitated back to God. His spiritual music was gospel music. We got the Best 68 Special Elvis Award, so, you know, the leather jumpsuit famous TV special programme. We've got the Best Vegas Elvis, which, again, people tend to sort of dismiss Elvis Vegas because they look at the later years. You look at the early Vegas years, 70, 71, he was still in his prime. We've got, apart from the competition awards, we've got the Best Young Elvis Award, which isn't Elvis in his youth. It's actually a youngster performing for Elvis. We've got the Best Female Elvis Award. And then we got the Best Overall Elvis Award, which is being judged tonight.
Well, obviously, getting dressed before show is is very important. It's time for mental preparation, and that's the time you have to become Elvis. And whether you're sick or you're tired, or you don't feel like doing the show, or you've got butterflies, you got to put all that behind you. You know, the show must go on, and the people want to hear Elvis. So it's time to suit up. But it's quite amazing that there's times when I don't feel well, and I just think I can't go on with the show. And when I put the suit on, it's just amazing. It's some kind of transformation that takes place, and that somehow I'm always prepared to go out there. You know, when the music starts and the crowd starts cheering, and the energy just comes to me somehow. It's incredible.
He's the best tribute artist.
He's the best.
Award is the festival.
Best festival Elvis to the.
Gotcha. So,
you wanted about 50 people.
So that's.
Say you can't find me, and I'll be out in about 10 minutes, alright?
Is there any sandwiches floating around there?
No, you want sandwiches?
Well, a lot of us are hungry down there, and if anyone wants a sandwich, it's in the spot up the road.
Don't do suspicious minds.
No, I'd probably do the one.
Don't do blue suede shoes.
I'll do the one review.
One review.
Yeah,
okay.
One review.
And.
Yeah, no, that's plan B. I'm going to do
that's
the one.
That's plan A now, right?
Yeah.
It's now or never.
Two people have gone and claimed to be with Craig, two women.
No Buffy.
Hi, I'm Black Elvis.
Yeah, it has been hectic, but I like the fact that it's slightly dysfunctional at the same time. My name's Colbert Hamilton. I grew up on Elvis when I was about 14, roughly around when he died. I don't consider myself an Elvis as in really being Elvis. I don't think that I am Elvis. I don't feel that I'm Elvis, but I just get off on the music. The funny thing is about doing Elvis and being a black guy is, in the past, what I've noticed is the apprehension of the audience. So you get this kind of feeling like, black Elvis, okay, let's check this out. And then, like, third number in. Usually they're up and running and going for it and jumping around and enjoying themselves. But the festivals, they can be fun. I've watched a few Elvises and there's been a few tears. That's quite funny. I always go in and just think I'm having a real good time watching everybody else stress out.
There's one seat left and 16 people have been promised them. And now the manager's got a problem, everybody's got a problem. And it's left to me, because I'm his son.
I'm all shook up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now we're to the problem bit.
I'd be lying to say if it was a smoothly oiled machine that was just slipping gracefully out of the harbour. It's chaos.
Peter, I can't pronounce some of the towns. Swansea? There you go, thank you. See? You know, last minute organization here. Yeah, it's going very good, as a matter of fact.
I'm proud to say this, she's my buttercup. I'm in love. I'm all shook up.
If I may, I'd like to read something that was sent to us today. Dear Craig, the fans in Wales have a treat awaiting them. Elvis is gone, but today, watching and hearing Craig is as close as possible to experience a real Elvis concert. Thanks for giving people a taste of the legendary Elvis performances. Somewhere, Elvis and the Colonel are smiling and saying, thank you. Thank you very much. With love to you and all of the fans in Porthcawl, Loanne Parker, Mrs. Thomas A. Colonel Parker.
Summers. Mr. Dave Riley. Mr. Craig Parker. Oh my God, everybody.
Before I present the award, I'd first like to thank the people of Porthcawl. I'd like to thank Peter. I'd like to thank the mayor. Everyone has been so warm, a wonderful welcome from you. Y'all are some of the friendliest people I have ever met. Now, I'd like to say that everyone up here is a winner. The important thing is that they are continuing the legacy of the greatest entertainer who ever lived. As they perpetuate his memory, it goes on to the next generation, and that's how we get new fans, and that's how we keep the memory alive. So without further ado, the Best Overall Award goes to Craig Parker.
We've kept one song back all night because I felt it was the way to finish the show, and we've said to all the guys, whoever wins, it's going to close the show with American Trilogy.
Oh, it's been fantastic. The people in South Wales are just very generous, very hospitable. They've been very kind to us, and we felt welcome from the moment we got here.
This one's for you, Porthcawl.
Oh, yes, I would come back. I would love to come back.
Well, I wish I was in the land of cotton.
The entire city, town, whatever you call it over here, has been so heartwarming to us. We feel very welcome.
It's been such a wonderful experience. I hope that they'll invite me again.
Look away. Dixieland.
And everything's been wonderful. Thoroughly enjoyed ourselves.
Yeah, it's been a success.
Absolutely. It was absolutely wonderful. Oh, I'm getting all choked up. Oh, yeah, brilliant.
Now hush, little baby. Don't you cry. You know that Elvis ain't never gonna die. Oh, all my trials, Lord, soon will be over.
Best I've ever seen. And I've been an Elvis fan for about 40 odd years.
I'd like to say thank you very much. God bless America, and God bless Porthcawl.
Oh, she is the biggest Elvis fan in the world.
Oh, I will never, ever forget this evening. It brought Elvis back when I was a teenager. I danced every song, every record he made.
Yeah, everything fell into place. Not a thing went wrong. It's all perfect.
I am definitely coming again.
You come again next year? It's booked for the same weekend. We're going to do it in the same weekend, first weekend of October. So phone Monday, book a ticket. Yeah, the first one, didn't
we? Yeah, thank you.